From between the hedges at Sanford Stadium to the practice fields, from Stegman Coliseum and wherever else the Bulldogs are playing, it's time to talk Georgia sports.
Touchdown, 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 Dogs win it!
From the Athens Banner Herald, here are your hosts, Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis.
Welcome in. Happy New Year. It certainly was for Georgia fans, or is, I should say. Another classic playoff game for Georgia. During this crazy comeback for the Bulldogs, I was thinking, you know, is this thing better than the Rose Bowl? And I ended up writing about that for my Sunday morning story. But when I got home, I heard Stetson on the end of the game interview say that he thought it was better than the Rose Bowl, but was it? Georgia 42, Ohio State 41. Ryan, what'd you think?
Well, I wasn't at the Rose Bowl like you were, so putting it in perspective is a little bit harder to compare what I saw on TV. I mean,
well, you watched it, didn't you? Didn't you watch it?
I did watch it, yeah. But, you know, I'm trying to think about, you know, when Georgia had put together that big comeback at the Rose Bowl. I don't know. It felt a little different. It felt like maybe, you know, that was the start of the Kirby era where it was like, hey, we're kind of happy to be here after the grind we went through beating Notre Dame and, you know, everything else along the way that season. But this just was pure agony for Georgia fans the entire game. And then just when you think you have it won, you know, Ohio State drives down the field and has a chance at a field goal. But, you know, if I'm just a regular person sitting at home, you know, I think that's one of the best games I've ever watched. If I'm just chilling at the house on New Year's Eve, you know.
It's Georgia versus TCU Monday night from SoFi Stadium, a national championship matchup that I don't think many people expected, certainly back in the preseason or that kind of thing. So keep it at onlineathens.com for coverage leading up to the game. As you mentioned, it nearly wasn't going to be Georgia. It was almost Ohio State. The Buckeyes had a 50-yard field goal in the waning seconds, chance to knock Georgia out and their unbeaten season. I was sitting next to Fletcher Page, one of our sports editors, and he didn't think the game was over. We needed to, you know, kind of upload a photo for the story I was going to pop online when the game ended, and you know, we had some Georgia wins photos and we had some Georgia loses photos. We had to keep changing it. And,
you know, you're typing a Georgia miracle comeback headline and then you're changing it to just fall short headline, you know?
Yeah. I mean, what will be your lasting memories of that game?
Well, you know, first off, it was like, man, CJ Stroud is just putting on a show. I mean, he proves why he is, you know, was all season a Heisman contender, and Stetson looked just the opposite for, you know, a good portion of a half of the game. And then all of a sudden he rallies, you know, the Bulldogs back in those last couple of possessions. And I mean, I think that's what's going to stick with me now. You know, I think Kirby after the game said Stetson's got to be better for Georgia to win the national title game. And maybe that's true. Maybe he just needs to have a more consistent game. But I think that's just what stands out is the furious comeback, you know, the big pass to Arian Smith there when it seemed like all hope was lost with about 8.5 minutes left. And that got him back in the game. And, you know, just that final 9 minutes of the game was just 100 miles per hour at all times. And the way that Stetson was able to pull it off again just added to his legendary status as, you know, the walk-on turned possibly two-time national champion.
Yeah, Stetson wasn't on top of his game. I mean, he threw an interception, you know, at one point on a, you know, I guess he didn't see the DB that picked it. He had that kind of weird lateral that he was trying to make something of, you know, when a play looked like right. It wasn't going to materialize like they wanted. But you look up at the end, 23 of 34 for 398 yards and 3 touchdowns. 10 of 12 for 190 yards and 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter as Georgia outscored Ohio State 18-3. Hey, let's make a quick mention. We're going to have Ross Dellinger in from SI.com. Usually like to promote the guest earlier, but he'll be with us in a little bit to break down Georgia and TCU and look back at the Peach Bowl. Did we mention this was called the Peach Bowl, the game they played in? I don't know if we did. So, you know, quiet game for Brock Bowers until the end when he made some important plays. But as you mentioned, Arian Smith came up huge. Kyrus Jackson and Don Blaylock with some big clutch catches. And A.D. Mitchell is back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, is it fair to say that he has two of the biggest catches ever in history? I think so, right? Last year in the national championship game, and then comes up with that catch the other day. I mean, he's clearly, you know, when he's healthy, he's one of the best Bulldog receivers. And, you know, hopefully he's all good for the national championship. I don't know why he wouldn't be, but man, he's got a clutch team too. And the Bulldogs definitely needed that the other night.
Yeah, C.J. Stroud, you mentioned, you know, I think he was – that was his best game of the year. I don't know what he did, you know, last season, but, you know, his best game as a Buckeye this season. The thing that really stood out to me was he was making a lot of plays with his feet. Now, he's not that much of a – necessarily a guy that's going to get a lot of – you know, I think that was a complaint for Ohio State fans is he didn't run enough. But in this game, he made some clutch runs when they needed it, 348 yards passing. And then Marvin Harrison Jr., as many suspected, and I certainly did, he was a big problem for Georgia when he was on the field. Five catches, 106 yards, two touchdowns, and gets knocked out of the game. I guess it was Javon Bullard with a shot to him, you know, on kind of a high lobbing pass that kind of just he was settled under at the back of the end zone. And then, you know, here came Javon Bullard.
You know, it looked like Stroud was just throwing it out of the back of the end zone. But getting back to him, I mean, that was one of those plays, you know, with his legs, not just running for yardage, but escaping Georgia pressure. And that had to be so frustrating for Georgia's defense. They got to him a couple times. I think even Javon Bullard had a sack. But when it just looked like Georgia about to get a hand on him and bring him down, he was able to escape and make plays down the field. And it kind of reminded you of Burrow a couple years ago when Georgia almost brought him down two or three times on that one play. He was able to get away and have a big gain. But, yeah, I mean, obviously on Twitter, we all saw the debate on whether that should have stayed as targeting like it was called on the field. I think we were all in the press box talking about how it seemed like a legal hard play that you expect in football. I mean, he didn't lead with the crown of the helmet. He came in with his forearm, broke up the play, and you know it's terrible that it led to the maybe concussion. I didn't hear if it was a you know officially ruled a concussion.
Yeah, that's why he didn't. That's why they didn't come. I mean, I think he wanted to come back in the game. Mm-hmm. He wanted to come back in the game, but they weren't going to let him because he was in concussion protocol.
But I think we were all in agreement in the press box, at least among the writers we were around, that it seemed like just a good hard football play, and it really didn't change the game. Good for Georgia. Obviously, Ohio State missing a big piece of their offense, but that's football. And, you know, another play, the Bowers first down. I mean, what's the legal play there? I mean, he had a hand in bounds. Nothing else touched out of bounds when he crossed the line to gain. A lot of close calls for Georgia, but, hey, sometimes you need breaks, and they got them.
Yeah, I mean, Brock Bowers on that play, I mean, to have the wherewithal and the athleticism to kind of, you know, have his body at right, just the right spot, you know, to get what they needed was very impressive and kind of like some just incredible football instincts to know how to do that.
It's funny when you look back at that, right? When, I mean, that was a fourth down play. Georgia was down 14 at the time, I think, and then Stetson followed with the lateral pass, but it led to 3 points that you kind of questioned at the time, but they ended up being really big.
They did get to Stroud to a certain extent. I mean, they had four sacks, but, you know, it wasn't like they were shutting down their passing game. Georgia's secondary, you know, was having problems, and not just the secondary, it's a combination deal. I mean, you know, sometimes there are guys matched up on a linebacker or, you know, and then sometimes the pass rush isn't there, but.
Well, and he's extending plays too, you know?
Yeah. Against these elite receivers though, you know, and TCU has some as well. I mean, is this kind of just who Georgia is? Are they going to, I mean, they're going to be able to make stops when they need them at the end and, you know, This is not, you know, this is not the same defense in that. I mean, they gave up 30 to LSU. They gave up 41 to Ohio State, you know, and a lot of yards on the through the air again.
Yeah, I mean, it's becoming concerning. You're right, a little bit. You wonder what the method was to shut down the Tennessee passing attack. You know, go back to that, right? I mean,
I think to a certain extent, I mean, this is playoff football. You know, these are elite offenses that have had a long time to game plan, you know, for these defenses. In this case, you know, I mean, you saw both Michigan and Ohio State put up a lot of points. I mean, and TCU put up a lot of points. Now, TCU had two pick sixes. So, you know, that give credit to the defense on those plays. But, you know, I mean, this was without a doubt the most exciting semifinal round in the 9 years of this playoff. I mean, I was on the field walking around, checking out pregame warmups. And then you had all the Ohio State fans cheering as TCU scored another touchdown against Michigan. But every time you looked up, there was somebody running like on a big play to the end zone. So it was certainly crazy.
I mean, wouldn't you think that Georgia fans were pulling for TCU? I mean, that seems like a better matchup. And then obviously you had the Ohio State hating the blue in the crowd too. It was funny to be down on the field during warmups and you'd hear just a burst of excitement and they'd be showing the what game was that? Fiesta Bowl on the big screen, and seemed like both fan bases were united in pulling against Michigan there.
I don't know if it's a better matchup. I mean, we saw Georgia matched up against Michigan last year and we saw the result. So ask me on Tuesday morning next week, you know, what that looks like. Before we bring on Ross.
I was just going to say, I'm thinking about Vegas. I mean, don't you think it's a little closer than 13.5 if it's against Michigan?
Yeah, that's certainly the case. But, you know, we'll see how it comes out in the wash. Darnell Washington, questionable, I would say, at best, maybe. We'll hear from Kirby. He's doing a teleconference this afternoon with everybody that is covering this game, I guess, or whatever. But, you know, it looked like an ankle injury, although Kirby talked to Marty Smith. ESPN has him kind of embedded, I guess, over Buttsmere this week. And he was talking about, I don't have the exact terminology he used, maybe like a soft tissue injury with a strain. You know, do you think Darnell Washington's going to be out there playing some football on Monday night?
Man, I don't know. If you'd asked me that, looking at him on the sideline in crutches or on crutches the other day, I'd say no. Hey, never count out, you know, determination, obviously, what Ron Corson's able to do. You know, I think if he can go or give it a go, I think you'll see him out there. And, you know, I know he's not thinking 100% about the NFL, but, you know, I think he wants to get out there and prove that he's a reliable guy if he can go. Now, you know, I also talked to Chaz Chambliss after the game, and he seemed like he'd be good to go. Ladd was limping a little bit. Is there any word on Ladd?
I mean, we were talking to him post game, you know, I think after the 2-point conversion, he didn't look like he was his normal self. I think that dude is just, you know, gutting it out. I mean, Darnell does have, you know, he's going to be a probable first round draft pick. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if there's a risk that he's going to like, you know, have an injury that would hurt his draft stock or something, but you know, then again, it's a national championship game. So these are the moments that you kind of do, you know, put that thing on the line to a certain extent. So we'll see how that plays out. A couple quick things, other things before we bring on Ross, is that your boy Hot Pod? No, what does he call himself?
Yeah, I like Hot Pod.
Is it no? What is it? I thought there was a different nickname. I can't remember.
I think we came up with about five in that one media session that day.
Oh, he was 2 of 4 on field goals, which is unlike him. Yeah. You know, they weren't necessarily chippies or anything, but. You know, I'm sure he's going to be excited to come back and have a chance to kick some other field goals. And this, well, probably just some point after Georgia would be happy with. But, you know, Ruggles wasn't the only one that had some problems kicking some field goals on Saturday night.
Yeah, absolutely. And hey, tell me how that synced up with New Year's. I mean, I did a little story on onlineathletes.com, and it appears that it did land about the time the ball hit the bottom of the.
All right. Hey, we need to make a quick mention. The scenario, I think, was 4th and 1 at the Ohio State 34. Buckeyes were about to punt. Kirby calls timeout. He gets words from upstairs. that the formation looked like something was about to happen, and they ended up having to punt because Georgia changed it up, I guess. Then the next play, I guess, was the TD pass to Arian Smith. I think I'm telling the order of that. But, I mean,
yeah,
that's a game-changing type of situation there.
Right, absolutely. Word on the Twitters is that there was 12 men on the field for Ohio State. I guess looking back at that, there might have been, and a lot of people were complaining that, you know, had Kirby not called the timeout, that wouldn't have been noticed by the officials. But they would have, I think, been buzzed from upstairs to, hey, maybe take a look at that. Can't they do that in college?
I don't know. It's
just another huge momentum swing. You're right in the game.
Yeah. All right. Let's jump on now with Ross Dellinger. All right, joining us now to talk the national championship game and the Peach Bowl is Ross Dellinger of SI.com, who has covered the SEC and LSU for a good while now and does a great job on the national scene. And Ross, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, you were at the Peach Bowl, which was a crazy way to bring in the new year. Where does that game rank of college football games you've seen through the years?
Oh, man. Really, really good. You know, it kind of had a sprinkling of everything. You know, any game that has the underdog, you know, jumping out to a big lead in, and then somebody, you know, the other team having to make a big comeback is always brings great excitement. And then that game specifically, in any close game, I guess, you know, it has these little, you know, we talk about game of inches, and that one had like it was truly like the game of inches. And in any close game, you have that where you have like one play that could change the game, and all these different plays that if one little thing would have gone differently, the game's result may have been different. And that play just had all those things, you know, the Kirby timeout before the fake punt, was obviously huge, you know, Brock Bowers extending the ball and getting that first down. You know, even the hit on Marvin Harrison Jr., who, you know, appeared to maybe have a touchdown, before the hit on him early in the game in the second quarter. Ohio State was going to go for it and picked up the first down, but they got called for an illegal motion. There was just all these little things that, if one thing goes differently, the game's result turns. And, so yeah, it was right up there. One of the best, you know, that I've ever covered.
Were you at the Rose Bowl there in 2017, the exciting, you know, Georgia-Oklahoma?
No, I wasn't there for that. But a lot of people kind of compared that game as far as CFP games. A lot of people were comparing that game to this past Peach Bowl. But I wasn't there for that. I did watch bits and pieces of that, I remember. And, yeah, it was that's a good one as far as the comparable.
Now your opinion on the hit on Marvin Harrison, I mean, was clean to you? I mean, there's a lot of debate on Twitter.
Yeah, gosh, targeting. I targeting is a frustrating penalty that is very, you know, somewhat subjective. I think we probably had a good idea of why targeting is in the game. If you watch Monday Night Football on Monday night. And the hit on Hamlin from the Buffalo Bills, that wasn't a vicious hit, and that wasn't targeting. But just in general, the collisions and the physicality of the sport, you know, the sport itself and the stakeholders of the sport are trying to make it as safe they can and trying to preserve it so that it would continue to be played. But all that said, targeting is incredibly frustrating. And I sometimes don't know what targeting is and targeting isn't. That hit seemed to be pretty clean, actually, when you saw the replay. But it's so subjective. It's a frustrating thing. It really is.
Seeing Georgia, you know, go 60 minutes battle with Ohio State, was your lasting impression, you know, from that game about Georgia that they're a resilient bunch that, you know, I mean, found a way to win? I mean, obviously – they needed help from Ruggles to miss that thing, or that they're kind of vulnerable and TCU can, you know, hang with them.
I came away, well, I came away thinking, number one, that Ryan Day and Ohio State and CJ Stroud, the quarterback, had a play great on the field and executed just a really good game plan. You know, Ryan Day is known pretty well as a good kind of schemer. And I think that he came into that game with a great one, to obviously target Marvin Harrison Jr. and get CJ Stroud out of the pocket a little bit. And CJ just played incredibly well. So there's that part of it. And then there's, I think, a portion of it where you're talking about with Georgia, and that they are clearly a very resilient bunch who, when they, and this was different, maybe this is different than last year's team, when they want to score, Georgia, they score, or they seem to be able to move the ball consistently when they really, really want to, really need to. And that's why I think this year's Georgia team, you know, seems more complete and better than even last year's team. And that's what I came away. I came away more so feeling good about Georgia, not necessarily feeling, oh, now they're going to, you know, they got exposed and now they're facing TCU and TCU is going to expose them more. I didn't really come away feeling like that. I came away feeling like Ohio State played really well, had a really good game plan, and a lot of ways probably should deserve to win. Like Kirby said afterward, actually, that they deserve to win the game, but Georgia is so talented and they're complete enough on offense that, and they have such a veteran, you know, solid quarterback that when they need to do it, you know, they do it.
Speaking of solid quarterbacks, you know, our readers and listeners, I'm sure, don't know much about Max Duggan other than he was in New York, you know, with Stroud and Stetson. But what do you know about Max Duggan and what, you know, he can do against defenses?
Well, the interesting thing about Max is, you know, he didn't start the year really as the starter. He kind of lost a quarterback competition and was only kind of put in the game when the starter got hurt. His name is escaping me. Morris, I think. I feel like I want to say, I think it was Chandler Morris. I think. And he started the year and then kind of got hurt, and Duggan came in, and man, he just hadn't looked back. It's been incredible. What TCU's done has just been awesome. It's kind of like this magical ride they're on, and everybody kind of thinks, you know, at certain points in the season that it was going to end and stop, and it just keeps on going. And he's played really well. You know, he is a he's actually, I believe, he's originally born like in Iowa, and he was a pretty big quarterback. I mean, he came out as a 4-star quarterback and had a bunch of offers from you know, Nebraska and Iowa and the Iowa State and, you know, all that. And for whatever reason, decided to commit to TCU, and, you know, he enrolled there a semester early, and he played, you know, played a lot, actually, from the start, from his freshman year. And he was off and on, you know, playing. And so he's got a lot of experience. It just all came together for him this year, especially in, you know, Sonny Dykes' offense, and which is kind of a off of the Mike Leach and air raid type of tree. And he's just really excelled in that offense, man. And it's been fun to watch. The kid makes plays, you know, when he needs to.
From someone that doesn't, you know, watch Georgia on a weekly basis like we do, you got 130 teams to kind of keep tabs on. What do you make of where Georgia is in year 7 under Kirby? Have they moved past Alabama already, or do they need to win Monday to do that? Or what do you, how do you view that?
Yeah, you know, I feel like everything is we evaluate everything based on championships. It's just like how not just the media is, but society, I feel like, and the world in general is winning championships. And Kirby's got one, and Nick's got what, seven?
Yeah.
So he's got a while to go. And this is, you know, this is a big one because it is, you know, we'd get him closer to that. We'd get him closer to that level. So, but if you just look at what they've done in recruiting Georgia in the last couple of years and what they've done on the field, especially in games against Nick and Alabama, you would see that if Georgia hasn't surpassed Alabama, it has gotten to Alabama's level and seems to have remained that way. You know, can it sustain that going forward is a big question, because that's the thing that Nick has done, and to an extent Dabo, although that is a question after the last couple of years, but it's just the him sustaining it for so long. You know, it's been what, 13 years or so since his first title at Alabama in 2009, and he's just sustained it for so long, 7 over 13, 14 or so. It's incredible. So can Kirby, who's a young man, can he sustain that going forward is kind of a real question mark. And this game is a good kind of evaluator or gauge on if it can be sustained and gets him one step closer. You know, it's kind of like Jordan and LeBron and the championship chase there. What, Jordan has six and LeBron has what, three or four? And, you know, can he catch him? You know, it kind of feels like that a little bit. Certainly Kirby has a lot more time, you know, than Nick does in catching him just age wise.
All right. Ross, we'll get you out of here on this kind of, you know, when you look at TCU and they just how they were able to kind of, you know, from a physical standpoint, more than hold their own with Michigan, which some people didn't think would happen. You know, how do you think they pull this upset? You know, do you think they have some of the characteristics of a team, you know, with Max in the passing game and, you know, an opportunistic defense that had a couple of pick sixes, that they can make this a four quarter game also?
That's the thing. They've kind of, I don't want to say get lucky, but they've got to make some defensive plays like they did against Michigan. They forced a fumble on the goal line. They returned two interceptions for touchdowns, and they stopped Michigan inside the five, on a fourth and goal. So you look at all of those plays, and that's a 28-point swing in a game. And the fact that Michigan was still in the game and could have won at the end tells you that, you know, TCU talent-wise, it's pretty clear it isn't to the level of Michigan. It certainly isn't to the level of Georgia. So if they don't have those opportunistic defensive plays, I think Michigan wins the game. So Georgia can't let that happen, right? They can't make the mistakes that Tulane's defense often either falls into or forces, because they've got to, you know, these mistakes aren't just out of luck either. So without those plays, right, Michigan probably wins that game. And without those plays, Georgia should win the game, I would think, just off of talent and even experience and all that stuff. So gotta limit the TCU defense from getting those big defensive kind of opportunistic plays. And I think Georgia's defense is good enough to slow down, you know, TCU offensively. You know, they've got some weapons, they do, and they play a kind of a fun, really fast tempo scheme. But I think Georgia can slow them down. They just really, on offense, Georgia's gotta limit those big plays.
Ross, we appreciate your time. Check out his stuff at Sports Illustrated, and I guess we'll see you in LA.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening to the Bulldogs Extra Podcast. Like what you hear? Subscribe today wherever you get your podcast. Give us a rating, a like, and even leave us a comment to let us know how we're doing. As always, find more content at onlineathens.com and in the Athens Banner Herald. Now, let's get back to the show.
All right, we thank Ross Dellinger of SI.com for joining us, talking about the Bulldogs and TCU and the Peach Bowl as well. And Ryan, before we talk a little bit more about TCU and get out, should mention that it's Georgia and Auburn in basketball Wednesday night, SEC opener, as a top 25 Tigers team comes to town. I'm going to kind of change my prediction that we talked about earlier in the season. I think this feels like a 7-11 SEC team now, which would be quite an improvement. Am I off base there?
You know, sometimes I think that is possible, and then sometimes they get a big lead and lose it, and you think maybe this is a 4-14 team or whatever. But I don't know. It does seem like Mike White has them, you know, playing hard the entire game. They just need to find maybe a shooter or two more and be more consistent. But I think your valuation there is accurate.
Yeah, it's not like I'm saying they're going, you know, 14-4, 7-11. All right. Let's talk a little bit about, about TCU. My impression of the Fiesta Bowl was this was not the Michigan team that we saw most of the year. JJ McCarthy threw a couple pick sixes. Although I was impressed with TCU, I was just very unimpressed with it wasn't the Michigan team I was expecting. Now, obviously, the Horned Frogs had a lot to do with that, but, you know, Max Duggan's ability to make plays with his feet will be an issue, I think, for Georgia. Do you think they'll put a spy on him?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, did they, you know, I need to look back at the film the other day. I mean, did they ever have one on CJ Stroud?
Well, look, Max is a better runner, like the body of work than CJ was. So, you know, you probably didn't for Ohio State coming in because you didn't necessarily think he was going to make those kind of plays.
Yeah. I mean, given the fact that he is so much of their offense, I can see the Kirby and Schumann and Muschamp putting together a plan that would definitely, you know, have somebody on Duggan at all times to limit him from being explosive and creating plays. So, yeah, you're probably right about that. I mean, they got to do something to keep him contained.
Look, nobody has really run on Georgia like Georgia can run on other teams. How many yards did Ohio State have rushing? It wasn't many. I mean,
you know, I didn't notice that, but, you know, Georgia's only allowed, I think, 79 per game.
They had more yards than I expected as I look at this now. They had 119 rushing yards on 32 carries, 3.7 yards per carry.
Well, you think about what did Stroud run for on that final drive? It was like a 35-yarder or something. Yeah, that was a big bulk of that.
Yeah. Well, I like their backup running back who played a lot more because their starter was banged up. DeMarcado is his name. Transferred out of Saddlebrook College. He's pretty impressive. He's kind of short but well built. I think he had a 69-yard run against Michigan. They don't have a Marvin Harrison Jr. type. Their best wideout is Quentin Johnston, but I feel like they can go like four deep in terms of guys that can make plays. Savion Williams, Jordan Hudson, Darius Davis, but it's probably not up to the level of Ohio State, but it's a pretty impressive group. And also watch out for defensive lineman Dylan Horton, a New Mexico transfer. I think he had a couple sacks in the Fiesta Bowl. Could be a key matchup with him going up against, if it's Amarius Mims or Warren McClendon. I think he mostly works on the against the right tackle. So we'll see how that plays out. And they have good inside linebackers, D. Winters, Johnny Hodges from the great state of Maryland, Quince Orchard High School in Montgomery County, Maryland, a Navy transfer.
You know, there seems to be some good linebackers come out of Maryland. Georgia knows that for a fact, right?
Jermon Dumas Johnson.
Hey, and don't forget MJ.
Yeah, they call him Pop.
Yep, they do. I see why, too, don't you?
All right, let's make some picks here. I don't have a score for you, but this is a 13.5, something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a I'm kind of, you know, maybe captured by the moment where they just, you know, needed a missed field goal to win against Ohio State. I think Georgia's winning another national championship. I don't know if it's going to be by more than 13 points. You know, it feels like it could be like a, you know, a 10-point win or something like that, which, you know what, Georgia will take anything. I mean, you get a natty back-to-back. I mean, that's damn impressive. And an unbeaten season is on the line. You know, I think what they can have is what happened to Michigan. You get a couple pick sixes, that's going to be some trouble.
Yeah, beggars can't be choosers, right? I mean, you take a one-point win all day, no matter how you get it. But I agree with you. I was thinking about this just the other day. I mean, what they did against Michigan, I mean, really opened a lot of people's eyes. I don't think anybody saw that coming. Now, Georgia's defense, it's been a little bit exposed in these last two games. Now, a lot of that is, excuse me, the effort CJ Stroud put on the other day was one you might not see, you know, for a long time. He was that good. So I do think TCU will keep this closer than 13.5. That's just a big number for a national championship game. But I think once again, we will have a Georgia national champion. People don't have to wait as long to open those bottles of Coca-Cola from just 1 year ago. So I bet it'll taste a little better to all those fans when they open last year's bottles and celebrate once again.
All right. Now, I say that if Georgia wins by 24, I won't be surprised either. So, but if I had to make a call, that would be it. Everyone have a great week. It should be a you know, another special moment to have Georgia, you know, playing for a national title on Monday next week. Ryan, I don't know when we'll talk, but maybe, I mean, when we'll do our next podcast. It might be Tuesday. While I'm still in LA, before I fly home, we'll see how that plays out. See how tired I am. See what other work I have to do. But if not, then it'll probably be late the week after, or you know, that week. So everyone enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next time.
Mark, safe travels. See y'all.